So we are holding on Min Bay's Ahmed Aleph, second line of the wide lines. We started talking that one of the chafis in our Mishnah is if most of the animal's ribs are broken. We said for our purpose, we say that an animal has 22 ribs, even though there are actually 26, but we discount four of them because they're smaller or they don't have marrow or whatever. And we said we said that as long as you have 12 of them broken out of the 22, then the animal's treif, regardless what configuration, whether we're talking about six on each side, whether we're talking about 11 on one side and one on the other. Ze'iri added, as long as you have 12 total broken out of the total 22, then the animal's treif, doesn't matter how they're distributed on the two sides.
50%.
As more than 50%, right. 12 out of 22, right. And Ze'iri had added that if that's only if the break is on the half of the rib closer to the spine rather than the half of the rib closer to the belly, to the sternum, or to the chest, whatever of the animal. Okay. Omar Ullah. So Ullah says in this connection, you have a machloikas on this actually. Ben Zakkai, Yomer, Ben Zakkai, which Rashi says, I don't know who that is. Usually Ben Zakkai would be Rabbi Yechanan Ben Zakkai, but the Pashto is here when we have Rabbi Yechanan arguing with him, then it's not going to be Rabbi Yechanan Ben Zakkai, because he's an early Tana and plain Rabbi Yechanan is an Amora. So the Pashto is an Amora who is otherwise unknown. Okay. Anyway, Ben Zakkai, Yomer, Neku Beroiv Tzad Echad. It depends. If the ribs are dislocated, then even if you only have the majority on one side, then the animal is treif. So if you have 11 ribs that we're counting as ribs for this purpose, so six of them is a majority, 11 on each side, so on each side six would be a majority. If you have six ribs dislocated on one side of the animal, then already it'll be treif from that. And on the other hand, if they're broken, then like the Mishnah had said, or like the Mishnah had said, spelled out, then you would need 12 or more to be broken for it to be broken. Because he says that once you have six of them dislocated, so he doesn't say why, but the Pashtus, I guess the idea is that dislocation is more of a disruption to the integrity of the animal than broken ribs. Broken ribs, I guess, can heal. Dislocated ribs, especially because, as the Gemara is going to show us soon, usually many times that can also involve vertebrae being dislocated. So therefore, that would more threaten the integrity of the animal. Okay, that's Ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan Omar. Rabbi Yochanan says either way, beineku beinishtabru b'roiv shnei tzadin. Note whether we're talking about ribs getting dislocated or whether we're talking about them getting broken. Either way, only if you have the majority of both sides, meaning in other words, 12 total out of the 22. 12 or more out of the 20. Okay. Omar Rav. So now Rav says in this connection another din. Nekrasel. Well, the halacha is like Rabbi Yechanan, right? Omer Rav, nekra sela v'chul, nekra sela v'chul ya'ima. What happens if a rib gets dislocated and along with it a vertebra gets dislocated? So the ribs are attached in the vertebrae. Later on, closer to the bottom of the Amud, the Gemara compares it to like a pestle on a mortar. Like you have a round pestle has a round end which goes into the mortar, and that's you pound and crush things in it. So therefore, it's like the end of each rib has a roundish shape, sort of. It has a rounded end, and it fits into a socket on the vertebra. Actually, what it is what you really have is it fits kind of between one vertebra and the next. You have like half the socket on one and half the socket on the other. But yeah. So Rav is saying that if a rib gets dislocated and along with it the vertebra that rib is attached to also got dislocated, then treifer, then the animal's treif. If any one rib gets dislocated along with the vertebra to which it's attached, and that one's not that big a deal, it's not that noisy up there, then the animal would be treif. If one rib gets dislocated along with the vertebra that it's attached to, then Rav is saying it's treif. Just one rib. What do you mean along with? In other words, that you have the rib got dislocated and the vertebra that's attached to also got dislocated. So then the animal is today, Rob says, even if the spinal cord as a whole is intact. The reason why an animal is going to be chafed if a lot of ribs are broken is because then there's nothing to protect the vital organs anymore, the lungs and other such things. But when you have vertebrae being involved that are dislocated, then you have a different issue. Leave it. Okay, whatever. Then it's a different issue because once you have vertebrae being dislocated, eventually that's going to affect the spinal cord as well. Right now, even the spinal cord may still be intact, but eventually it's not going to be like that. Okay.
So what if we say just one vertebra
dislocated? Fine. That's we're going to discuss that later. We're going to discuss that point later. But right now, Rav is saying that Ben Zakkai is saying you need at least 6 to be dislocated. Rabbi Yochanan is saying you need 12. Rav is saying that's all true if there's no vertebrae involved. But if there's vertebrae involved, even one is going to be tricky. Okay. Amri Rav Kahana v'Rav Asi l'Rav. So now Rav Kahana and Rav Asi ask Rav in that connection. Nekra tsela mikan v'tsela mikan v'chol yakayem esmahu. What would happen if one rib was dislocated on each side of the animal, opposite each other, but the vertebra between them is still in place? Mahu, what would be the deal? Close the door, please. Would you? Thank you. So the question is, Rav told us that if one rib and the vertebra with it is dislocated, then the animal's chafed. Rav Kahana and Rav Asi are asking him, what if you have one rib opposite each other, one on one side of the animal, one on the other side, but the vertebra that both of them were attached to is still in place? Omalahu, so Rav answers them, why are you asking me about a case where an animal was cut in half? Effectively, if you have one rib is missing from each side, then it's the equivalent of the animal being chopped in half or having a deep cut down the middle of it. And we already learned in the first paragraph that the animal is not only trefa, it's actually nevela in that case. So the question is, Rav nami gistira kamar. So, and isn't the case of Rav also sort of a case of Gistera? If a rib is dislocated and the vertebra that it was attached to goes with it, automatically the rib on the other side is dislocated also because it's got nothing to be attached to. So Rav's case is also Gistera. Why is he so surprised at Rav Kahana and Rav Asi speaking of Gistera? The answer is Kika Omer Rav, Sela Vloicholia. You're right, but Rav is talking about where you have a rib was dislocated without the vertebra that it was attached to. On the face of it, what the Gemara is saying is that Rav would say even one rib dislocated, even without the vertebra being affected, is already enough to make the animal trip.
So why you said previously that?
So that's the question. Cell of a whole yakama. Rav clearly spoke of a rib together with the vertebra. The answer is what he meant is tel avachasi cholia. He didn't mean the rib and the whole vertebra, because yeah, they're right. That's exactly like Rav Kahana and Rav Asi's case, because then inevitably the rib on the other side is also dislocated. Because then inevitably the rib on the other side is dislocated too. What Rav is talking about is where you have a rib is dislocated and half of the vertebra that it's attached to is dislocated. The other half is still in place. So the other rib still has what to be anchored to. So Rav is going to say, in other words, like this. If you just have a rib dislocated, you're right. That's not enough to make the animal trick. For that, you would need 6 or 12, like we said before. Once you have a rib and half the vertebra is dislocated, then Rav, because you can have, well, you could have one obvious possibility is you could have the vertebra itself broke, yeah.
No.
We already learned that if the spine itself is broken, the animal is not in and of itself straight. The spine is not a vital organ. The spinal cord is a vital organ. So you can have vertebrae of the spine cracked, and the spinal cord is still intact, and you're okay.
Have one rib dislocated, the animal is still alive.
That's fine. And Rav is saying a rib by itself is not a problem. A rib and half the vertebra to which that rib was attached, then already the animal is chicken. Because then that's already going to affect the integrity of the spinal cord eventually.
How much does it have to be dislocated?
What do you mean, how much does it have to be dislocated? You have that the half of vertebra is not in its proper place. It's not next to the other half. And the rib that's attached to it has gotten pushed out of place. Okay. So the question is, the cloud of Kahana Rav Asi sellable at Koyangri. Okay, so in that case, then the implication seems to be that when Rav Kahana and Rav Asi are asking their question, they're talking sellable at Koyangri. Apparently, they're talking about one rib on each side, but the entire vertebra being in place. Because if they were talking about that half or the whole vertebra was dislocated, then we already know from what Rav is saying that it would be traced. They would have no reason to ask. And now we see that Rav is answering them that of course it's not only traced, but it actually goes beyond being traced. It becomes a nevela because it's an example of gistera. The animal is effectively cut in half by that. The problem with that is va'amar Ula, but didn't Ula say ben zakai amar nekru b'roiv tzad echad nishtaber b'roiv shnei tzadin? We started with that Ula is saying that we said that Ula said that even Ben Zakkai is, who's the more machmir one, says that you need six ribs dislocated in order for the animal to be traced. And here Rav seems to be saying, well, here you have Rav is telling Rav Kahana and Rav Asi that two ribs dislocated, one on each side of the animal, is already enough to make it traced. So how is that?
Maybe things that two ribs on each side. On each side is more stringent.
No, because when Ula, when Ben Zakkai is mentioning, well, that's what the Gemara is going to answer, that maybe we're talking, maybe Ben Zakkai is talking about where they're not opposite each other. Hold on a second. But yeah, but right now the Gemara assumes that Ben Zakkai, when he says six are dislocated, it doesn't matter what arrangement those six are in, then it's traced, but only if it's six, not less than that. Whereas Rav Kahana and Rav Asi are asking Rav, and Rav is telling us that two already, not only is traced, but it's actually nevela.
Two and one on each side.
One on each side, right. Even if the vertebra in between them is completely intact and completely in place. So how is that? And now, I mean, of course, the obvious answer you could answer is that Rav represents a third opinion. However, we're showing him say on that the Ramban, I think, says it's unlikely to have such a diametrically opposed machlokas like that you should have, whether it's treif or not, fine. We've had machlokas in like that throughout the parish. But to have that Rav is going to tell us it's nevela with only two dislocated, and Rav Yochanan, on the other hand, is going to tell us it's completely kosher unless you have 12 dislocated, that's a little too far, yeah. That's a little too far. So that's the question, in other words. So what does Rav mean to say that only two ribs dislocated is already enough to make the animal trace if it's one on each side? If even Ben Zakkai, who's the more machmir, says you need six, and Rabbi Yochanan says you need 12, right. The answer is okay. Omalach, Rav can answer you. The case that Ula is quoting Ben Zakkai might be where you have six are dislocated, but they're not. None of them are opposite each other. You have one here, one here, one here, whatever. So there's no place that you actually have. Right. It's not continuous, but you don't have any one place in the animal where you have the ribs on both sides are dislocated. Yeah, but it goes in a zigzag pattern, kind of. You have the first one on the right, the second one on the left, the third one on the right, the fourth one on the left, etc. Then he would say you have to get to six dislocated for it to be traced. But Rav, where's Rav? We'll be talking about where you have two, where you have the first one on the right and the first one on the left, I'll say.
So now Rav is saying that discontinuous.
No. Again, Rav would be saying as long as you have two that are opposite each other, then that would be, even if the vertebra is in place, the animal is traced. What about Ben Zakkai? Ben Zakkai, we'd be talking about a different case where throughout the length of the animal, you always have on either one side or the other, you have a rib still in place. You never had that one rib on each side parallel to each other got dislocated. Right. You have one over here, one over here, one over here, et cetera. Okay. The question is, what about Va'omer Rav Yochanan B'Rov Shnei Tzadin? Okay, but we also have the opinion of Rav Yochanan, who said that you need the majority of both sides. You need 12 to be dislocated in order for it to be traced. Over Rav Shnei Tzadin, Eyef Shebo Lekayim Achad Minai Ozek Neged Zeh. And if you have 12 out of 22 are dislocated, and you only have 11 on each side to start with, inevitably that means at least one pair of them is going to be opposite each other. So again, how is it that Rav Yochanan is saying that you get to that only when you get to 12 of them is treif, and not even nevela, only treif, and Rav Yochanan and Rav is going to go so far as to say that with only one opposite each other, it's already going to be nevela.
12 or 6?
Rav Yochanan is saying 12. Ben Zakkai said 6. Rav Yochanan has said that this that we said in our Mishnah, that if 12 are broken, the animal is treif. Rav Yochanan said the same thing as far as dislocated. So therefore, once you have 12 dislocated, means inevitably you have at least one pair of them is opposite each other, because that's how it is. You only have 11 on each side. And yet, Rabbi Yochanan says only in that case is it treif and not even nevela. So how do we have, again, such a diametrically opposed thing that Rav should say that with only one opposite the other, then it's already not only treif but nevela? The answer is hasam buchna b'loy afisa. Yes, but the difference is that before, when Rabbi Yochanan and Ben Zakkai are talking about a case where the buchna was dislocated without the afisa. Buchna and afisa mean, again, the buchna is the end, metaphorically it's the end of the pestle, the rounded end that fits into the afisa, which is the mortar, and then you pound things in there. So Rabbi Yochanan is talking about where the rib and the piece on the end of it that looks like the end of a mortar because it's rounded is dislocated, but not the afisa, not the socket into which it went in the vertebra. Hocha buchna v'afisa. Whereas the case that Rav Kahana and Rav Asi are asking about Rav is where actually we're going back on before we assumed all this time that Rav Kahana and Rav Asi's case is that only the two ribs, one on each side, were dislocated and not the vertebra. Now we're saying that not. Now we're saying that actually Rav Kahana and Rav Asi are also talking about the case where part of the vertebra or the whole thing is dislocated. So that's the difference. Therefore, it's more stringent again because you got the spine involved now. And once you have the spine involved, then the spinal cord is eventually going to be involved also.
So buchna and afisa would mean?
Buchna would mean the rounded end of the rib.
The socket.
No, not the rounded. Not the socket. The socket would be the head of the rib, right? So you have the head of the rib, and afisa would be the socket on the vertebra that it fits into, right? Okay, so the question is, Yehochi Hainu de Rav. In that case, Rav Kahana and Rav Asi are telling us exactly the same thing as Rav. Rav told us that if you have a rib dislocated and you have the half of the vertebra that it was attached to is also dislocated because it broke off, let's say, then it's straight. Rav Kahana and Rav Asi are talking about the same case where you have two ribs dislocated and the vertebra between them is also dislocated. So what are they adding? The answer is Lashmi Yelohu de Rav. Okay, they hadn't heard Rav's din. They came up, they stated this din independently. So the question is, v'libu minei k'derav. In that case, they're saying a din about what happens if two ribs are dislocated, one on each side. Why don't they ask Rav? Okay, so what would be the din if only one rib was dislocated? Why? Rav said that if even one rib is dislocated along with half a vertebra, it's treif. Rav Kahana and Rav Asi asked him, what about if you have a rib on each side? And now we're restating their question. They're not asking about where the vertebra is in place. They're asking about where the vertebra also got dislocated or half of it. So the question is, why are they only asking him about two? Why don't they ask him about one? The answer is savri, because they figured like this. We're not going to ask him about one. We're going to ask him one case from which we can deduce two things. We're going to ask him one thing from which we'll get two answers. Because like this, if we ask him about the case where one is dislocated, then we don't know. We don't know yet what the answer is because we didn't hear the din that he said about that. Therefore, hanichei amalon treifa. So it'll work out nicely if he tells us that it's treif if even only one rib is dislocated along with a half a vertebra, koshik and tauti. Well, then we'll know automatically. All the more so if two of them are dislocated with a half a vertebra, then of course all the more so it's treif. E amalon kshera. However, if we ask him about one and he tells us it's kosher, we're still going to have the question, okay, but would two be enough to make it trick? So therefore, they preferred to ask him about the case of they preferred to ask him about the case of two, because if they ask him one, it might tell them the answer. It doesn't resolve the case if there are two.
But if you ask two, it doesn't resolve.
That's the question. You could say the same thing the other way around. So now what happens if they ask by him what happens if two ribs are dislocated. Hanichi amalu hukshera kolshken choda. So then it'll work out nicely. If he tells him it's kosher with two, then we'll understand how much more so it's kosher if there's only one. But if he tells them it's treifa with two, akasi chodim and bayaluhu, they're still going to have the question on one. So what have they gained by asking about two compared to asking about one? The answer is savri, because they figured like this. Im ken, if we ask him, like this, what we're going to do, they figured, is we're going to ask him about two. Why? On the face of it, as we just said, there's no benefit to be gained by asking about two versus one. Either way, we might end up with an answer to both. We might end up with an answer to one. But they're going to figure, if we ask him about the case of two, nirtach karotach, then he's going to get upset at us. He's going to get angry at us. Because he's going to say, chod a treif or tauti mi boya. If even one is treif, how much more so of two? In other words, what they're saying is like this. Based on the way that Rav answers us when we ask about two, we'll automatically understand from that either way what the din is with one. If he tells us it's kosher with two, then we understand it's kosher with one. If he answers us with two,
why would you say if it's kosher with two, it's necessarily kosher with one?
If even two ribs are dislocated and with the vertebra between them, and the animal is kosher, how much more so if only one is dislocated? One is less of an injury than two. It says if he tells us that two are kosher, then we'll know automatically that one is kosher. Okay. If he tells us that two are kosher, but he tells it to us calmly and he's not upset at us for asking, then we will understand from that, we'll be able to deduce from that he would hold one is kosher. Because what would happen if he holds that one is treif, when we ask him about two, in other words, they're saying, we're not just going to figure out based on what he answers us, we're going to figure out based on the tone of voice in which he answers us. If he answers us, if he's upset at us for asking about two, then we'll understand from that we should have asked about one because he already holds it. No, it's not that they're afraid to ask. In fact, the lawyer Baishan Lamed Valar Kapta Malamed. But they're saying based on the way he reacts to their question, they'll be able to deduce what they should have asked. They'll be able to deduce what he might have expected them to ask. And therefore, when they ask about two, if he answers in an annoyed way, why didn't you ask about one? Are you assuming that one is kosher? Well, then we'll understand. Then we'll understand automatically that he holds one is trick. Now Rashi understands the other way around, not because if we ask him if they were to ask him about one, and he were to say that it's kosher, and you might think he might also get upset because he would say, well, why are you bothering to ask about one when I hold that even two is kosher? Rashi says no, because he might not care. Okay, so we think that two is treif also, so we're being more machmer than we have to. Fine, that's not a reason for him to get upset at us for asking about one, but the possibility that we might mistakenly think that one is kosher when he holds it treif, that would be reason for him to get upset. Yeah, because it's worse to say that something is kosher when really it's treif. If you're extra machmir, okay, I'll turn a chos on, I'm learning treif yisrael and all that, fine, but at least it doesn't cause that people are going to be eating treif. But if you ask him in such a way that implies that you thought that a case which is really treif is kosher, namely hypothetically the case of one being dislocated, then he's going to be upset at it. What do you mean? How could you even possibly think that a thing like that, one rib dislocated with a half a vertebra, should possibly be kosher? It's a good thing that you were never practicing for people. You're going to cause them to eat treifus, etc.
So this way,
what they did is they asked two, figuring this way they'll see what his reaction is. Depending on whether he answers kosher or treif, and also if he answers that two are treif, and see what his reaction is, then we'll know what the answer is for one automatically. So the question is, okay, but in the event they actually did ask him what the din is with two, and he didn't get upset at them. So how does that help? They still don't know. They still don't know what the answer should be for one. The answer is given to Kamalahu Gistra Kamritu, but he says to them like in a tone of voice like that, how could you possibly be asking about a Gistra? So automatically, Heiner Rizkei, that's the equivalent of being upset at them. In other words, being angry at them doesn't actually mean that he has to yell at them if he says to them something like that. Like in other words, you guys are supposed to be great Talmid Chachamim. What are you coming asking me about a case of Gistera? That itself is sharp enough to...
Gistera
literally means like cut in half. We talked about it in the first paragraph, like when you have a deep cut down the back of the animal or whatever. Anyway, the point is, therefore, it worked out. They asked him about two.
Right.
He answered. He didn't get upset, but he says to them, "Gistera kamri too. Why? What are you even bothering to ask about a case of Gistera?" So therefore, that tells us.
So now
they understand two is already a Gistera. It's nevela. One would still be trace though. One Rav would hold that one is still trace, which is what Rav said before. So now, not having heard what Rob said explicitly about one, they were able to deduce it by asking him about two and the fact that he answered to them, Yistera Kamri, like that. Uh-huh. Okay.
He said before one,
and they asked about two. First, again, we thought that when they were asking about two, we thought that they were asking about two without the vertebra being involved.
Right.
But we said that can't work because we have the opinions of Ben Zakkai and Rabbi Yechanan that you need either 6 or 12 dislocated for it to be trained.
Well, they can have different opinions.
Again, but we're not going to have so diametrically opposed that Rav is going to hold Gistera when you have Rabbi Yechanan and Ben Zakkai are going to hold it completely cautious. It's so diametrically opposed, you're not going to have. Yeah. So that's how it is. The bottom line is that if you have vertebrae broken, you need 12 for it to be traced. If you have vertebrae dislocated without the spine being involved, you also need 12 for it to be traced. If you have vertebrae dislocated involving the spine, where any vertebra or any half of vertebra is dislocated, trace on that basis. Continuing.
And if you have one dislocation of a vertebra without...
That we're going to talk about on Ahmed Bey's. We're going to talk about on Ahmed Bey's if you have vertebrae dislocated without ribs, which we'll get that. Okay. Omer Rababar of Shila Omer of Masna Omer Shmuel. Here's another din in this regard. Nekra Sela Meikra. If a rib was dislocated from its socket, meaning, so Rashi learns that what we mean is that even without the vertebra being involved, then Shmuel is going to say it's straight. So in other words, Shmuel is more machmir than Rav, and than any of the opinions that we had so far. On the other hand, Tosfos brings from Rabbi Natan that no, Shmuel is also talking about where it was dislocated together with the half of vertebra. Anyway, so Shmuel says, Nekra Selamikra, Vugugolos Shenechbetza Beruba, also if the skull of the animal was Nechbas, which means crushed or cracked or whatever, along most of it, and we'll talk about on Ahmed Bey's what we mean by both, by most, Ubosa Achofes Reva Keres Beruba, or if the flesh, the muscles that cover most of the keres, is mostly ripped open. We talked about the other day, the plank muscles, the abdominal muscles, or whatever, that cover most of the keres.
Selam
Ikra, we said, is a rib being dislocated from its place of attachment. So according to Rashi, we're talking about only the rib was dislocated, not the vertebra. According to Tosfos, we're talking about the rib with half the vertebra, like Rav said before. So those three cases, Rav Masna is telling us in the name of Shmuel, in all those three cases, the animal is traced. Where a rib is dislocated, where the skull is crushed or cracked or whatever along most of it, and we'll see on Ahmed Bey is what we mean by most, and if the abdominal muscles or flank muscles or whatever are ripped open in their majority.
Those three different
cases that Rav Masna had said in the name of Shmuel that are changed. Right? But actually, the reason is because we didn't have them explicitly until now. We didn't have them in the Mishnah or anything else. Okay. So now let's analyze them. Nekra Sela Meikra Shefa. So you're telling me, Shmuel, that if even one rib gets dislocated, then the animal is chafed. Or Aminu, I have a contradiction. We learn in a Mishnah, we learned this at the beginning of the Perek, actually, Kamach Yisarin B'Shedra, how much of a spine of a human being has to be missing for it not to be Matame B'Oil. So again, you have cases where you have a whole human body, of course, is Matame B'Oil. Various parts of a human body can also be Matame B'Oil. But you have, including certain collections of bones or whatever. Among them is if you have a, 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 skull by itself or a spine by itself is enough to be metamethyl. But if you have the spine is missing something, then it's not. How much has to be missing for it not to be considered a whole spine? The Shammai says only if it's missing two vertebrae, or with the lemon choyachas, and the soul says one. And the Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel b'chein l'tzeifa. And the point is, the relevance of it to our sugya is that Shmuel is saying the same machloikas of the Shammai b'tzilo also applies to Hilchas Tzeifas. So according to Shmuel, the key thing would be whether a vertebra was dislocated, not whether. Why would a rib dislocation be without the vertebra being involved make it Tzeifas? The answer is hachat sela b'lechuya. According to Shmuel, it seems that yeah. The answer is hacha sela b'lechoya. The difference is here in our sugya over here, we're talking about that a rib was dislocated, but not the vertebra that was attached. Hasam choya b'lechoya, whereas over there we're talking about a different din, which is that if you have a vertebra is dislocated without the rib being dislocated also, then also it's treif. In other words, there are two different cases. Shmuel is telling us that Beth Hillel would hold, and Allah is like Beth Hillel, that one vertebra dislocated is enough to make the animal chafe. And in addition, he's also saying, a separate din, that if a rib is dislocated, then also the animal is chafe. Again, according to Rashi, we're talking about completely without involvement of the chulia at all. And according to Tosfos, we're talking about with the involvement of half a chulia. So the question is, okay, I can understand easily enough how a rib can be dislocated without the vertebra being dislocated. How do you have a vertebra being dislocated without the ribs that are attached to it being dislocated also? The answer is, that can happen when you get to the vertebrae further down the back of the animal that don't have ribs attached. Shili means the end, kafli of the flank. In other words, think of it: the spinal cord of an animal has you have a bunch of vertebrae over there.
Right.
So you have the first cervical ones of the neck. Then you have the thoracic ones. Whatever the point is, you have thoracic, lumbar, whatever. But eventually, you reach the ones towards the back of the animal. Yeah, the lumbar ones. Those don't have ribs attached. So there, the point is, Shmuel was telling us, if even one of those gets dislocated, even though there's no ribs attached to them, nevertheless, that's also enough to make the animal trip.
Why should it be more than in the thoracic?
It's not more than. Shmuel is saying that if a vertebra is dislocated anywhere along the spine, then the animal is chafe, and also only one according to the Bittel, and also separately that if one rib gets dislocated, Shmuel says also the animal is chafe.
And Rav?
So Rav before had said that only if the rib is dislocated with half a vertebra. According to Tosfos, Shmuel was saying the same thing. According to Rashi, Shmuel was being more machmir than Rav. But be that as it may, the point is, what Shmuel is telling us, that Beit Hillel would hold one vertebra dislocated is enough to make the animal chafe. Don't think that was only talking about the vertebrae further up towards the front of the animal, which have ribs attached to them. No, it means even the ones further to the back of the animal. Even especially, I mean, we learned earlier in the parak that there comes a point in the spinal cord itself where it's not so vital to life. There comes a point, Beina Parashis, we had that whole business over there with three branchings of nerves that come off towards the end of it, that once it reaches someplace in that area, then if it's cut, then the animal's not chafe anymore, because then you have the integrity of it is not vital for the animal's life. It's still able to hold itself up with its hind legs. But now Shmuel is telling us even if it's in that area, if a vertebra is dislocated, no good. Okay.
Until now,
we didn't realize that. We thought that Shmuel is telling us why is he telling us if a rib is dislocated but then he's telling us separately that a vertebra is dislocated. It sounded like there's a connection between them. No, he's saying they're two unrelated things. Rav Oshia asks on the general thing, so you're telling me that with Shammai holds, when it comes to Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara, that you need two vertebrae missing in order for the human spine to not be metameh b'oil. And Shmuel is telling us, when it comes to Treifus, though, on the other hand, that Shammai would be makel, because they would say, if it's only missing one vertebra, then it's not treif. So the question is, v'lisniya gabe kula
bishram.
The question is, v'lisniya gabe kula bishram and v'chumer b'sillel. Why is this machlokas not listed in the Sechta Edius when it gives a whole list over there of all the cases where bishram is makel and b'sillel is machmir, where usually it's the other way around? This machlokas ought to be included in there because in Hilchos Tzefus it comes out bishram is makel and b'sillel is machmir. The answer is Omalei Rav. The answer is Rav answers to Robert says on the side, answers to him, because he itchil inyan tuma. Because the original question, when it was brought to the Beis Medrash, was regarding the genium of tuma, inyan tuma itchil. It was asked regarding tuma v'tava. There was a case where a person was in an oil with a human spine that was missing one vertebra, and the question is he tuma v'oil or not? So in that case, v'shama comes up to be the ones who are machmir, because they would say that only if two are missing, is it not v'tava? One, the guy is still tummy. So even though, because that's how they hold. That's how they hold in that case, that only two vertebrae missing is enough to make it that it's not a complete spine. So yes, there does come out of it. Shmuel is telling us that there results from that of Kula in Hilchos Tzefus. However, the original question when it was asked in the Beis Medrash was about Tumah V'Tahara, where B'Shamay is Machmir. Therefore, it's not listed among the cases where they're Makel, because the fundamental case where they said they're Din was a case where they were Machmir in Tumah V'Tahara. It happens that out of that there comes a Kula in Hilchos Tzefus, but that's a side thing. We don't count it. We don't list it in Adius for that reason.
So they were machmir in the initial case.
They were machmir in the initial case. The result of it, which is the case of Tumah V'Tahara, case of Tumas Oil. The result of that is you end up with a Kula in Hilchos Tzefus. But that wasn't the topic that they were discussing at the time. So therefore, the Mishnah in Adius is not going to list this as one of the things that they were Makel on, even though in practice it comes out that way. Okay, now going to that, we said that Shmuel had said three dinim. One about the dislocated rib, one about, we said, that the skull was cracked or crushed or whatever, the gugolos shenechbis of a ruba. So what do we mean by roiv? Boy Rav Yirmiyah. So Rav Yirmiyah asked the question like this. Roiv goivha or roiv hekefa? What do we mean? Do we mean most of the height of the, skull? Or do we mean most of the circumference of the skull? So okay, so Rashi explains like this. The part below the eye is not significant for our purpose. What's significant for our purpose is the part of the skull which contains the brain from the eyes and upwards. So therefore, so you have then the goiva would be the height from the level of the eyes until the highest point of the skull. Hekefa, meanwhile, would be the circumference. So when we say,
right.
So when we say roiv, which of those are we talking about roiv? That's Rashi's explanation. You have a number of other explanations among the Rishonim what exactly goivha and hekefa are. So the result is you end up with machlokas Rishonim. What exactly is the roiv that we're asking about here? Anyway, the answer is
the area.
I don't know. But the question is basically, well, I mean, we're talking about that it's cracked in like many different places or whatever. So the question is, are we talking about that most of the height is cracked, or are we talking about that most of the circumference is cracked? Well, again, if you have a lot of cracks also, then yeah, it's going to be most of the area as well. Fine. But we're talking about, in other words, let's say you have one crack going around most of the circumference. But it's only one crack, let's say. It doesn't have any height to it. So is the animal treif
exactly.
or not? Right.
So
or vice versa.
Like has no height.
So that's the question. Would it still be treif on the grounds that it goes around most of the circumference? Okay. Anyway, so the answer
is it would. If you found the area, it would certainly not.
Well, but the question is, I mean, most of the bone is intact. You have a crack over here, but if you count in terms of total area of the bone, most of it is intact. But you have a crack that goes, let's say, most of the circumference around, then maybe that's enough to make it straight by itself.
So if you understand it in terms of area, you can bypass the height and the circumference.
But then you're going to need a larger area for it to be traced, and that's not necessarily what the Gemara is asking. Okay. Be that as it may, anyway, the point is that you have a few, and the answer is teku, and therefore, of course, we have to be machmir. Either one, most of the height, or most of the circumference is, or most of the width. I think you have another explanation of Rishonim that we don't count the whole circumference, just the distance between one eye and the other. Then already the animal is chasing the
Okay. Okay. case we consider it.
So. Yeah. Okay. Then we had Shmuel's third din, or Basar Achayfa Reiva Keres Berubai. We said if most of the muscles that cover the keres, the first large stomach of the animal, if most of that is torn through, then the animal is safe. Basar Achayfa Reiva Keres, the flesh that covers most of the keres. Again, we've discussed before the idea that part of the keres is behind the rib cage, and the rest of it sticks out further back towards the back of the animal and is protected only by the flanks and the belly of the animal. So if most of that flesh is gone, then Shmuel was saying it's chayv. So boy Ravashi. So Ravashi asks, what do we mean when we say what happened to that flesh? What happened to those muscles? Beroiv karua, are we talking about that most of it was ripped? Which would mean then even if it was ripped, how much more so if it was removed completely? Or maybe is it safe only if most of that flesh was actually removed? Maybe most of it being ripped is not enough to make the animal safe. What do you mean? Tifshitlei, we should be able to answer the question that we're talking about that it's ripped. Miditnan, because we learned in our mission, a keres apnimis shenikra, if the inner keres had a hole, or shenikra roiv achitzona, or if most of the outer keres was ripped. And v'amri b'ma'arav v'mishmei de Rabbi Yosef of Chanina, and we discussed there in the Sugya, back on Daf Nun, that Rabbi Yosef, we had several different opinions of what the Pnimis is and what the Chitzonis is, but we had Rabbi Yosef of Chanina's opinion, kola keres koloi, the actual keres, the actual internal organ, the rumen itself, zuri keres apnimi, that is the keres apnimi, and a hole in anywhere in it makes the animal chayv, ve'zeu keres achitzona, so what is the keres achitzona? Boso achofa zuri v'keres, that would be the muscles that cover most of the keres. And we said over there that if most of it is ripped, and then the Mishnah is telling us if most of the keres achitzona is ripped, then the animal is safe.
So obviously, the question is, if keres achitzona includes the longitudinal axis?
No, that's not the question. That's not the question. The question rather is,
what's
roiv? Okay, but they say roiv is roiv in any direction. You could argue when it comes to the skull, maybe there's a difference between height and circumference or whatever. I don't know. But with the abdominal muscles, the pashtos, we're assuming there's no difference. But the question is that we already had Rav Yosef Chanina's explanation of the Mishnah that you have if most of the abdominal muscles are ripped through, then it's treif.
Yeah, we're talking about.
Right. Well, in other words, the cut, the rip or whatever is along most of the length of it. When we say cut or ripped or whatever, mean all the way through. In other words,
what does all the way through?
All the way through. In other words, the entire thickness of the muscle from the outside to the inside is ripped, and you have that rip extends the length or the width, so most of the length or most of the width or whatever of the keres.
So you want both.
It needs to be all the way through. It needs to be all the way through. Otherwise, not a keres. Yeah.
Well, I'm asking.
No, that's what it is. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, the point is that Rabbi Yosef of Chanina tells us that if Basar Achofa Roiv HaKeres is ripped, then it's straight. So therefore, that should be our answer. Obviously, then, when Rav Ashi is asking over here, is it enough that it's ripped, or maybe ripped is not enough to make it straight, but actually has to have been removed, let's say cut out or whatever. The answer is okay. So midihu taima elul Shmuel. Okay, but the whole question we're asking over here, and our sugya over here, is to explain Shmuel's opinion. And Ochi Omer of Yaakov Anachmeni Omer Shmuel. And we said there in that sugya that Shmuel had a different definition of keres achitzayna, of keres apnimis and keres achitzayna. He said mokum shein by mila. Shmuel had said over there, what is the definition? Keres apnimis and keres achitzayna are two parts of the keres itself, not involving the abdominal muscles at all. But rather, Shmuel had said, the area that's called the keres apnimis is the area where there's no woolly-like hair, or villi or whatever, villi inside it.
Kershes.
And the
kershes?
No, not the beta kershes. We're still talking about the keres over here, the large first stomach. The large first stomach doesn't have any kind of specialized lining.
Right.
It's just basically a large sac.
Right.
So that's the thing. It does have a specialized lining because it has, in parts of it, it has villi. In parts of it, it has villi closer or further apart. This is the keres over here again.
That's
the other bit, yeah. So on the inside of it, there are areas that have milas, that have like wool-like hairs on the inside, right. Villi, and parts that don't. So Shmuel is saying the part that doesn't have the villi is the inner keres. The rest of it is the outer keres. So according to Shmuel's understanding of that, The Mishnah hadn't yet told us anything involving the abdominal muscles. The thing the Mishnah was telling us about was about a rip in the keres itself. So therefore, now when he's telling us that you should know there is a trefa that involves the abdominal muscles or the flank muscles or whatever, aside from the keres itself, where there are parts of it where a puncture will make a trefa and parts where a rip will make a trefa, the point is we still don't know the answer whether Shmuel would be saying that it's trefa only if that part is ripped, even if that part is ripped. And how much more so if it's actually been removed? Okay. Here's some pictures of it. Okay. So you have like this. The dotted line over here outlines the area of the area of the abdominal muscles where the keres is within those. When you shech the animal and you cut it open, if you cut out that area, you will see the whole keres. Now, the question is, does Shmuel mean that the animal is treif even if only most of the length or width of that is ripped, and then all the more so if a chunk of it was removed? Or does he mean only if a chunk of it was removed and that chunk is most of the area of the keres, but a case like this would still be kosher? That's the question. So we thought to answer it on the basis of Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina's view, who says that this already is treif, and therefore there's the answer. But the answer is Shmuel disagrees with Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina anyway, because he holds that the Mishnah had never talked about the abdominal muscles. The Mishnah, which distinguished between parts of the keres where a puncture makes it treif and parts where a rip makes it treif, is talking different parts of the keres itself, the internal organ, and therefore we don't know what Shmuel would say about these abdominal muscles, whether he requires the majority of them to have been cut out for it to be treif, or even only if the majority of the length or width of it is ripped. That's the point.
Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina would say
automatically, as soon as there's a rip in the majority, it's trace, because that's nikra, that's the majority of the length or width, the length or the width of the character. So Rav Yosi ben Chanina would say that that's trace, right? We don't know whether Shmuel would agree with that. But Shmuel himself has a different definition of keres akasona and keres akninis than Rav Yosi ben Chanina does.
This, show me a picture, this is called the keres also?
This is called the Bosar HaKhoifah Esteroiv HaKeres. This is the Bosar HaKhoifah. This is the flesh that covers the majority of the keres. Yeah.
But
it's not the keres itself. So again, according to Shmuel, within the keres itself, you have an area of it, the area that doesn't have thickly spaced villi, where even a puncture in it of any size makes a trace, you have a different part of the keres itself, the parts that don't have, and then the parts that do have thick villi, where only a rip of the majority of it would make a trace. Rav Yosi ben Chanina disagrees with that concept, because a puncture anywhere in the keres itself makes a trace. It's only when we're talking about the abdominal muscles can you talk about that a rip would make it, that only a rip makes a trace, not just the whole right. But Shmuel disagrees with that. Okay. Fine. Now we have the next case of our Mishnah, the next and actually last case of our Mishnah of an animal that's treif is udrusas hazeh. We said in the Mishnah, if an animal was attacked by a wolf. Okay. So now let's talk about what kinds of predators make what kinds of animals treif. The working assumption that we're going to be working with throughout this Gemara is you need a minimum size predator compared to the prey in order for it to have a fatal effect on it. This that we're talking about, the Gemara is going to talk soon about the poison that it injects, and we talked the other day whether it's actual poison or whether it's bacteria or whatever it is exactly. There is something actually in Sichas Kolin, he brings from a sefer called Zivchei Koyin from the early 1800s. Where he says that there are actually places in the world where among the same species of predators, you have ones that actually inject venom and ones that don't. Chazal didn't want to start distinguishing. You're going to start distinguishing between one wolf and another, let's say, and start saying and trying to figure out does this one inject poison or not. So they just said overall. But that's one way of explaining it. And again, the other possibility is that maybe we're talking about bacteria. Sichas Kolin himself also mentions an idea. The Gemara is going to mention soon that you also have to have that the predator is striking in anger. So therefore, he says maybe the idea is that also we're talking also to a certain extent the ruchni is taking effect, that the predator's anger has a certain bad effect on the animal. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, Amr of Yehuda Amr Rav, b'behema min azeiv lamayla. When it comes to animals, only if it's attacked by an animal the size of a wolf or larger is it traced as potentially traced as Jerusalem. But in other words, if it was attacked by an animal smaller than a wolf, then it wouldn't have its poison or venom or toxin or whatever you want to call it wouldn't be strong enough to kill an animal. Over
the
snakes are something else. Actually, we're going to talk later on that actually snakes. First of all, the Gemara is going to tell us that even with land animals, we're not talking about where it bit it. This whole concept that we're talking about Jerusa and venom and whatever is only if it attacked it with its only if it clawed it, right? If it bit it with its teeth, that in and of itself doesn't make it Jerusa. If it punctured an organ, that's different. But yeah, no, this whole concept of Jerusa is that we're saying that it injects some kind of toxin or whatever, which eventually will kill the animal. No, so that we're talking strictly with the claws, as I was going to say later. So it wouldn't apply to a snake anyway. A snake we do have later on in our parak in a couple of blocks. We're going to have a Mishnah that says that if an animal was bitten by a snake, it's not treifa. However, you're not allowed to eat it because of sakonis nefashis, because you're going to end up but it's not treifa.
A wild cat,
we're going to talk about soon. Hold on. Okay. So Rabbi Yehuda is telling us that when it comes to animals, only if it was an animal the size of a wolf or larger that did the attack. Only then do you have a problem of Jerusa. And by the way, Jerusa doesn't automatically make it trace. What it means is, as we're going to say later on, you have to check to see what the effects of it were. As usual, we'll see later what exactly you check for. But we'll get to that later on. Tomorrow we may get to today, tomorrow, whatever. But as usual, the posts can say that many of the posts can say that we don't have the expertise to check, and therefore that's no good unless it lives
today.
For 12 months. Yeah, today. Again, we mentioned the other day that Rashi mentions that as far back as the Bahag, he says that Tom Sessu was one of the early going. Okay. Anyway. So the behemoth min as the evil amayla, over oifus min an nesul amayla. When it comes to birds, when it comes to kosher birds, if one of them was attacked, only if it was attacked by a bird the size of a nes, which is a hawk or larger, is there a problem of jurisdiction. If it was attacked by a smaller predatory bird than that, then there's no problem of
jurisdiction. So an eagle for sure.
Right. So the Gemara says, l'mo'uti mai. Okay, what is Rav Yehuda, what is Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, coming to exclude by that statement? Are you going to say that he's coming to tell us that if an animal was attacked, that if an animal was attacked by a cat, then it's not Jerusa? You don't need Rav to tell us that. Taneno Jerusa Faze. Our Mishnah had clearly said it was clawed by a wolf, which preposterous implies a wolf, not a cat. The Chitema Hokamash Malon is a Vagasa Nami Doris. So you're going to say, okay, but maybe the chiddush of the Mishnah is you would think maybe a wolf is not large enough to cause drisa, to cause possibly fatal injury in a large animal. Maybe that's the chiddush of the Mishnah. When we say that, maybe you would think it's the other way around. Not that the Mishnah is coming to exclude smaller animals, but that the Mishnah is telling us even a wolf, even though really a wolf is not really all that large an animal, nevertheless, it has the capability of causing drisa even in a large animal such as a bull. Maybe that's what Chiddush of the Mishnah. So there is the point, and that's a valid point that it's mainly only it's really only animals. Well, it has claws. I mean, it has claws. It just doesn't have retractable claws.
That's a
claw. Call it whatever you want. So later on,
the
claw I don't know if it's like that. Yeah. Whatever. It's true. Only animals from the cat family, like lions and whatever, have retractable claws. Wolves do not. What?
Birds can grip in.
Right, but okay. Wolves also. Okay. Anyway, the point is, nevertheless, you still have under the claws of wolves, you can easily have bacteria collect over there.
Okay.
Anyway. So maybe, in other words, so you're saying because the Mishnah mentioned a wolf automatically, that means no smaller animal. Maybe just the opposite. Maybe the Mishnah wants to tell us that even a wolf is able to cause drisa in a large animal like a bull. But that can't be Bahatsnan, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, because we have continuing in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Jurusat has a Vedaka, where that a wolf only has the capability of causing Jurusa to a small type of animal, a sheep or a goat. When it comes to a large animal, like cattle, then it would be chased only if it was attacked by a lion. So therefore, we see that the Mishnah is not telling us that a wolf is able to cause drusa in a large animal. V'chitema Rabbi Yehuda Miflad Polig. So you're going to say, okay, no problem. You have the Tanakama, you have Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanakama maybe is telling us that a wolf is able to cause drusa even in a large animal, like a bull. And meanwhile, Rabbi Yehuda is disagreeing and telling us that no, the only thing that a wolf can cause drusa in is a small animal, like a sheep. Maybe you could understand it that way. And then the point is that maybe Rav, therefore we need Rav to tell us that you should understand that never that the Mishnah is still, that you still have to understand, though, that a calf is not capable of causing drissa. The problem with that is, Rabbi Yehuda tells us in the name of Rabbi Ila, or Rabbi Lazar, it says on the side, that Rabbi Yehuda is not coming to disagree with the Tanakhama, he's just coming to clarify. The Tanakhama had said drusat azev, so Rabbi Yehuda clarifies, you should know, azev is only able to cause drusat when it comes to a small animal. For a larger animal, like cattle, you would need a lion. You need a predator the size of a lion. So therefore, we're back to, in other words...
Drusat means that the predator has to be much larger.
Not necessarily larger than the prey, but it has to at least be of a certain size relative to the prey. It doesn't necessarily have to be physically larger than it, but it has to be at least of a certain proportion relative to the prey to be able to cause drusa. We're getting into a whole discussion of it now. But the point is, we're still trying to figure out. Rav had told us that when it comes to animals, only a wolf or larger is able to cause drusa. What is Rav trying to tell us by that? What is he trying to eliminate by that? If he's trying to eliminate a cat, on the face of it, we already know from the Mishnah that it's eliminated. Because Rabbi Yehuda is explaining the Tanakhama, and Rabbi Yehuda is telling us, even with a small animal, like a sheep or a behemoth daka, a sheep or a goat, even there you need something at least the size of a wolf to cause drusa, implying that a cat not. So we automatically know from the Mishnah that a cat can't cause drusa. So what is Rav telling us?
Maybe a cat cannot cause drusa to a much larger
animal. No, because we're saying, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, even a smaller animal, even a sheep or a goat, you need a zev, you need a wolf. So then, in other words, not a cat, because a cat is smaller than a wolf. Okay, the Gemara answers, so what? Gavra. No, we're talking about that. No, we're not, okay, well, hold on. The answer is Gavra Karamis. What are you trying to bring a contradiction between two different people? Rabbi Ila or Rabbi Lazar has his way of understanding the Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda agrees that Rabbi Yehuda agrees with the Chachamim,
yeah,
and is just clarifying them. Rav doesn't necessarily have to agree with that. Rav can say that Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim are disagreeing, but the Chachamim would be saying that a wolf, even though it's a smallish kind of animal, is able to cause drisa even in a large animal like an ox, like a bull. And Rabbi Yehuda would be disagreeing and saying that no, it can only do that to a daka. So maybe still, Rav could have his understanding of the Mishnah, according to which we still need to be informed that a cat can't cause drusa.
The other animals are smaller than a wolf and a like a wolverine. They can't even keep it in the cage.
Yeah, hold on. We're going to talk about it. So far what we have is that Rav is informing us that when it comes to animals smaller than a wolf, for example, a cat, then yes, they can't even affect a behemoth daka. That's one possibility. Or a second possibility is maybe even the Mishnah itself is implying that a cat can't cause drisa. Maybe we could understand the Mishnah like Rabbi Ilo or Rabbi Lazo understands it, that only an animal the size of a zeev or higher is able to cause drisa, not a cat. However, what would be Rav's chiddush, Mao de Tema, you would think to say, Urcha de Milsa Katani, maybe you would say the reason why the Mishnah mentions a wolf is because it's more normal for wolves to attack. maybe though the truth is that a cat would be able to cause Jisa. Kamash Malon, that would be Rav's Chiddush by excluding a cat. So in other words, the point is one way of looking at it is that Rav would be saying that when it comes to small animals, a cat could cause Jisa. Only when it comes to larger animals does it need to be at least a wolf. Let me try that again. One possibility is Rav is telling us that any animal smaller than a wolf is not able to cause Drisa on any kind of animal, not a large one, not a small one. Hold on. First of all, mice aren't kosher. Second of all, again, keep in mind we're talking about kosher animals. Kosher animals, even sheep and goats, are larger than a cat.
A pigeon. A cat can rip off a pigeon.
Yes, and if it rips it, then if it rips it open, obviously it's going to be tricked. What we're dealing here is the specific concept of drusa, which is that it sticks its claws into the animal or into the bird or whatever, and it injects some kind of toxin, whether it's bacteria or whatever, or an actual poison or whatever it is, which eventually can cause which causes damage and eventually death to the victim. What we're saying is, so again, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav is telling us when it comes to animals only mean as able amila. So one possibility is that Rav is telling us that anything smaller than a wolf cannot cause drusa, cannot cause this kind of thing of drusa, even with a smaller animal. And the other possibility is that the Mishnah itself would already be implying that a cat can't cause drusa. However, Rav needs to stress it because we shouldn't think that the Mishnah mentioned a wolf only because it's more normal for wolves to attack animals than kosher animals than cats. And therefore, Rav has to specifically inform us, which is already implicit in the Mishnah, that a cat. Okay. You actually have, we're not done the discussion yet because we have other opinions over here in the Gemara, as we're going to see. And plus, you end up with, you actually have a machlokas Rishonim. Which of these two answers are we accepting? Which of these two answers represents, in the end, what Rav holds?
Which is?
Again, one that he's saying that nothing below is the Ave is able to cause Drissa at all, and the other one that he's specifically excluding a cat. Okay, but again, you have other opinions as well that we're going to have in the Gemara over here. With that said, by the way, it does say as far back as the Ram, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, says that when you have in places where they have domestic cats and they have chicken coops, you don't have to worry about Drissa necessarily, even if the cat got into the chicken coop, because generally the cats are domesticated. They don't usually attack the chickens. If you have reason to suspect that it did, that's different. But just stand a domestic cat wandering into a chicken coop is not in and of itself.
But hyenas, it's more than a wolf.
Okay, so that's, again, we're going to be going through a number. We're going to go through a couple of different animals over here. Right on. All right. Okay. Amram of Amram Drissa. Drissa choso unmiya. When it comes to young sheep or young goats or young sheep, which those are not only in and of themselves, they're inherently smaller animals because sheep and goats are smaller than cattle, but on top of that, these are baby animals and therefore they're even smaller of that. So chosel is a cat. Nemiya Rashi translates, Rashi says, yesh omrim that it's a marten. A marten is a little weasel-like creature. Anyway, so he says that the drusa chosul and amir begdoyim esloyim, that a cat or a marten could cause drusa in baby goats or baby sheep. Drusa chulda ba'ofer. So when it comes to birds, a chulda, which is a weasel or a rat or some creature like that, is able, rat or weasel, there's a few different possible translations of it, is able to cause drusa. Okay, the Gemara says maybe I have a contradiction. So here's, by the way, here's a picture here's a picture over here in Sichas Chulin. The animals are shown to scale, so you can see the sizes of the various predators that we're talking about relative to the animals that we're talking about, relative to the kosher animals or birds that they might attack. And here you also have on the previous page you have a lion and you have a wolf also to scale. So that's the point, though, is that it's, I don't know if it's necessarily like a specific cutoff, like only that's actually a falcon or some bird of prey like that. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, there's also, by the way, there's a couple of different opinions of Rishonim about the identity of some of the animals and the birds that we're talking about over here. For example, the reason they have a picture of an owl over here, because you have some Rishonim who understand that that one of the predatory birds we're talking about over here, Rashi translates it as something like a falcon. But then the Oroch brings a couple of possibilities. One of them is that it's an owl. Anyway.
A
hawk was a nate. That's what we're talking about. But there's also the Mishnah mentioned a bird called a gas.
And he can still the Greek though very well.
Right. But that's the point, though. It depends what kind of creature we're talking about that it attacks. So that's what we're discussing over here. Okay. So again, so far we had Rav telling us that a cat can't do Jerissa. Then we have Rav Chista telling us that a cat or Martin could do Jerissa when it comes to a baby sheep or a baby goat. And a Chulda, a weasel, could do Jerissa when it comes to a kosher
baby sheep.
Yeah.
A cat could
do this. If a cat attacks a baby sheep and then sinks its claws into it, then that'll be enough. The venom, the toxin or whatever that it ingests is going to be enough to kill. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara says, mate, we have a contradiction. A Braita says, drusas chosol nate unumia, the drisa of a cat or nate, which is a hawk, or numia, which is a marten, that makes the animal treif only ad shetinakiv l'cholol, only if the wound caused by its attack goes all the way into the body cavity. In other words, so Rashi actually says what it means is that for that purpose, you would treat their claws as if like they were just a thorn or some other foreign object that got into the body. Only if they actually puncture an internal organ does it make the animal treif. But not just the attack, not just if they puncture the skin, right? The Rambam seems to understand somewhat differently. There's a Truva and the Tashbit that explains that the Rambam would say like this. The Rambam would say that you still have to have, that in order for it to be traced, you would have to have the normal effects of drusa that you usually see, that the Gemara is going to discuss later on, that the area becomes reddened, the pasture becomes infection or whatever. The point being, in other words, even now we've learned before, for example, that the liver of an animal is not so vital that a puncture in it would make the animal traced. Unlike, for example, we said the lungs or the intestines or various things where even a small puncture makes it traced. However, so the Rambam would understand that, let's say, for example, what this Braita is telling us is that, let's say, a cat attacks an animal, one of two things has to happen for it to be traced. Number one, the claw has to penetrate all the way into the inside of the animal. But number two, if one of two things will happen, then either it punctures an organ where a small puncture makes it strafe, okay, then it's strafe without any further ado, or it punctures an organ such as the liver where a puncture in it normally doesn't make the animal strafe, then you would have to have the simonim of drusa over there, then you would have to have that it turned red in that area in order for it to be strafe. That's how that happens. What?
In the liver itself,
let's say, if you found simonim drusa over there, if you found evidence of the infection or whatever post-attack, then it would be traced, but not otherwise. The point being, avol drusa leslahu, evidently then, the Braita is telling us that just the attack by the cat or the hawk or the marten in and of itself is not enough to cause drusa, just when it attacks the outside of the body. So what are you, Rav Chista, telling us that a cat or a marten is able to cause drisa in a baby sheep or goat, implying even if they only attacked it superficially on the skin? So the Gemara answers that with Kisbara Nesloidoris. Okay, so what are you thinking, man? Aval drusa leslahu, meaning just drusa by itself is not a problem, unless the puncture goes all the way into the inside of the body, and according to the Rambam also sets up simoni drusa over there, right? Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara answers back the tisbara. So what are you thinking? You who are bringing this braisa, with braisa mentioned a hawk, Nesloidoris, What are you? How could you possibly think that a hawk is not able to call Jerusa? Well, it's not a Jerusa fanate. We said in our Mishnah that we said in our Mishnah that if you have a Jerusa by a hawk, so obviously a hawk can call Jerusa. So obviously there must be something wrong with this Braisa.
No, but he said a Jerusa that's internal.
No. But the Braisa had said that a nate in and of itself, there's not a problem of Jerusa unless it punctured all the way into the inside of the body. Whereas the Mishnah had said Jerusa fanate, right, which means that just the attack on the clawing of a hawk itself. So yeah, even superficially is enough to make it straight. Okay, the Gemara says holy kasha. Okay, that's not a problem because kan ba'ofis kan b'doyim afloyim. You could say because there's a difference between birds. You could say there's a difference between birds versus baby sheep and goats. You could say that the Mishnah when it says Jerusa tanais is saying like Rav Chisda had said that okay, so in other words, the difference between the Braisa, which says a nate can't cause Jerusa, and the Mishnah that says that it can, so one would be talking about if the nate attacks a bird, that in and of itself is not a problem of Jerusa. And the other one, the case when our Mishnah said that it could, because in and of itself, it's not so much it's punctured all the way into the body. No, not all the way into the body necessarily. A nate doesn't necessarily puncture with claws or with claws or whatever you call them into the talons, but it doesn't necessarily penetrate all the way into the body. The Braisa is telling us that only if it penetrates all the way in past the skin and the muscles and everything into the body cavity, only then is there a problem. Whereas the Mishnah had just said generically that if a nate attacks then it's chased. So we could answer that the Mishnah and the Braisa are not contradicting each other because the Mishnah is talking about. The Mishnah is talking about an attack on Gdoyim or Tloyim, on young sheep or goats, and the Braisa is talking about on full-grown birds. Yeah. Okay. Nevertheless, Mikol Mokum Lo Rav Chisda Kasha. Okay, but we still are left with the question on Rav Chisda because Rav Chisda had mentioned about a cat or marten that said that it only applies to Gdoyim or Tloyim, that only young sheep or goats are susceptible to Jerusa from them. The Braisa had said, generically, that a cat or a hawk or a marten are only cause Jerusa only if they penetrate it all the way to the inside of the animal. So Rav Chisda is telling us that when it comes to young sheep and young goats, even a superficial attack by a cat or by a marten is enough to make it trace. The Braisa is implying only if they attack penetrated all the way into the body. The answer is who da amaki hide
in the Braisa?
That's what we just said. The Braisa seems to contradict Rav Chisda. Because the Braisa is saying only ad shetinokel v'cholo, only if the puncture goes all the way. Forget the Mishnah a second. The Mishnah didn't mention cats or martens at all. The Braisa mentioned cats and martens. Rav Chisda also mentioned it, but Rav Chisda said that a cat or a marten is able to cause Jerusa on a baby sheep or a baby goat. The Braisa is saying the only way they can cause Jerusa is if they penetrate all the way to the inside.
So what is it?
The answer is, Huda Amaki Hai Tana. The answer is yes, but Rav Chisda doesn't have to agree with that Braisa because he can be following a different Tana. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Beribi Oimer, Beribi, which is the name of a Chacham, Rashi says, yes, that's a Braisa, so yeah. Loi Omru Ein Jerusa El B'makam She'ein Masilin. Because Beribi says that when do we say there's no Jerusa for these creatures, for a cat or for a marten, El B'makam She'ein Masilin. Only when there's only when nobody is trying to save the bird or the animal or whatever from it. Then the predator doesn't get so angry. When there's nobody trying to save the victim, then the predator doesn't get so angry as to inject them. Or at least if it does, it's not so intense. But when there's somebody trying to save the animal, then trying to save the victim, then the predator gets so angry that it's being opposed, that then it goes and injects much more of the toxin. Enough even to be able to kill an animal, even where otherwise it might not have been able to. So that's how we can answer. So human being or another animal or whatever, or even the we'll stop over here. We'll start this discussion over tomorrow because we're kind of in the middle of the topic and it's my time. But basically, right now, what we're doing is we're distinguishing. We're saying Rav Chisda is talking about a case where somebody is trying to save the victim, or somebody is trying to save the animal that's being attacked, then what happens is that makes the attacker much more angry, and therefore it injects. So therefore it injects the toxin and poisons the animal. As opposed to the Braisa that says Jerusha Chosol Meisun Miyad Shnaka Lachalo, that it's only a problem if it punctures all the way into the body cavity. That's talking about when there's nobody trying to oppose it. Then it doesn't inject that much venom, so then you only have a problem if it actually penetrated to the inside of the body. Okay. And we'll resume this part tomorrow, guys.